Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Talking Puck Podcast. I'm Tom Callahan, and I'll be joined here in just a moment by Mike Haynes. And together we're going to take a look at the upcoming conference final series. It's Tampa Bay and New York, and Edmonton and Colorado. We'll take a look at both the East and the West. Not only the teams that advanced, we'll talk about those series, but also the teams that bowed out in the last round. Do they have work to do? Are they going to be okay for next year? We'll get into that as well. So stay tuned. Plenty more coming your way here on the Talking Puck Podcast. And don't forget, if you like what you hear, please subscribe, follow the podcast, and click the bell to get the notifications. All right, here we go. Hello, everyone. Welcome in once again. It's time for the Talking Puck Podcast. Tom Callahan, Mike Haynes here with you, and this is the conference final edition. We are going to preview both series, Tampa Bay and the New York Rangers, Colorado Avalanche, and the Edmonton Oilers. One of those four teams is going to hoist Lord Stanley's Cup at the end of it all. But Mike, an interesting path to get here, and we start as we often do with the East. Tampa Bay, a 4-0 sweep of the Florida Panthers. The Rangers, a second consecutive seven-game series win, this time over the Carolina Hurricanes. Let's start with that Rangers win, because the home team had won every, and you know I like stats, I'm going to give you this, the home team won every game in the series. That's happened 22 times now in NHL playoff history that we've had the home team win the first six games. Game sevens are now split 11 and 11. That is a strange thing to me. I expected if the first six went to the home team, well, game seven probably went to the home team the majority of the time. Not so. 500 record for the home teams in game seven.
Yeah, you just do maybe at some point. But, you know, this one had some interesting circumstances to it. You know, I think it came down to the goaltending situation. Rangers goaltender got better as the series went on. It is also a great example, too, for teams when you fall behind 2-0 in a series. I mean, how many times have you, as a fan or being part of a team, you on either side of it, Tom, you go up 2-0 in a series, you think, oh, this is easy. We're all right. You know, they're not going to win. The other team's not going to win 4 out of 6 games or 4 out of 5 games. That's just not going to happen, right? You don't think that. You think you're up 2-0, you're going to win a series. And vice versa. You should. Vice versa, you go, well, you know what? This doesn't look good. Not only do you have to win 4 or 5, they've still got 2 more home games left, you know, the other team. So that, you know, kudos to the Rangers for doing that. And especially, you know, I just thought that their goaltender got better. We were wondering whether or not Frederik Andersen was going to come back at some point. He was definitely one of the best goaltenders this season in the NHL and didn't play a playoff game this year. 14 playoff games, didn't play one. And Antti Raanta pulled in game 6. And we talked about it on our Sunday show. I thought it's going to go one way or another for him. He's either going to be a goaltender that just can't wait to get back in there, has something to prove, and is going to have a great game. Or it's one of those cases like, ooh, my confidence isn't great right now. And whether you want to fault him or not, he did not come through in game 7. The Rangers goaltender was better, and the Rangers upended Carolina. And I just think also the East, when the playoffs began, I think was much more uncertain as to who was going to come out of there. We knew every series was going to be good, and it has been. Other than the Tampa, Florida one, which I thought was going to be the best series, that ended up being maybe the most one-sided, which is so bizarre to me. But otherwise, great series. It could have gone, obviously, with all the Game 7 stuff, it could have gone different ways. And I just thought the East was the toughest to come out of. And we'll get into that a little bit. But I'll let you run here with the Rangers winning their series against Carolina.
I agree. Shesterkin got better as the series went along. I think he was the better goaltender. Raanta, I do not fault him on those first two goals, especially that Kreider goal, the power play. And that's the thing. Both goals are on the power play. Carolina couldn't stay out of the box. During the regular season, their penalty kill was awesome, but I said it all through this series, Mike actually said it through the playoffs for Carolina, that their special teams needed to be better. It wasn't. You give up those two early power play goals, even at home, those are killers. And then they got a power play following that midway through the first period, didn't convert, didn't even really feel scary or dangerous on it. At that point, I started to think, this is probably the Rangers' night. And in a one-game winner-take-all situation, that's really all you need. And the Rangers came out and wanted it more. And look, both of those are really, really good hockey teams. But the Rangers, they're, and this is the other thing we talked about Sunday night, their big names were big names. I thought Panarin looked dangerous out there. I thought he was all over the ice. Kreider got a couple out there. I thought he looked really good. You know, the guys that you needed to be active and involve, Zibanejad looked great. You know, and the Rangers, if they carry that kind of play in coming up here against Tampa Bay, I can give them more than a puncher's chance in this series. Now, I've already said I think Tampa Bay is just, you know, on fire and they're going to roll through. But, Mike, I don't know. I mean, the Rangers looked pretty good to me. And I can't – you want to talk about a goaltending battle? Oh, my goodness, I can't wait for this one coming up.
Absolutely. It will – this – I think was not what the Lightning wanted. I think they would have preferred to see Carolina, and the Rangers are a little more dangerous to them, I think, for the conference finals for several reasons. I think the Rangers have got confidence now. They have won a couple of game sevens. They have come back in two series too. That's the other thing. If you're Tampa Bay, you wouldn't be shocked if you take a lead in the series. But remember, the Rangers, they were down 3-1 in the series to Pittsburgh. They were down 2-0 in the series to Carolina. This is a team that doesn't just lay over and die. So you got to imagine Tampa Bay, they're going to be rested. They're certainly talented and seem to have their hunger back and are rolling. You could see them taking now they have to start on the road. Their Rangers get to start at home, but Tampa Bay, they're capable of winning on the road. And but if you're the Rangers, you believe that even if we fall behind in the series, we can come back. So the only thing that they don't have that Tampa Bay is going to bring that Carolina didn't have, and really Pittsburgh, it's been way too long since they won a cup. They've got guys who won cups, but it's been a long time. They don't have the experience, but they've got that youthful energy, and they've got a belief in themselves, and they got a great goaltender. It's, you know, it will be a very, very entertaining series, I would imagine. Now, I thought that with Tampa Bay against Florida, but Rangers are playing really well right now, and they've knocked off the number one team, and this should be good. Although you just think Tampa Bay, they're just waiting, aren't they? They're just sitting there going, okay, glad to see game seven there, but we're ready to play again.
Mike, the other thing the series features is two world-class coaches. John Cooper is a guy with a couple of cups, and his team would drive through walls for him, and they absolutely love the guy. But can I call Gerard Gallant underrated? The job he did in Vegas was tremendous. I thought he got the short end of the stick when he got let go there in favor of Pete DeBoer and ends up with the Rangers, spends his time there now, you know, honing this team to they've won now a couple of playoff series. And again, I still think the Rangers are probably a year ahead of schedule with this. So, you know, I'm looking at this Rangers team with the coach by Gerard Gallant. They really seem to be putting things together at the right time right now. Again, the power play was sharp. The big names are the big names. That, to me, makes for such an intense series coming up with Tampa Bay. And you're right. This is not what Tampa Bay wanted. But, again, looking at Tampa Bay, who are now rested, just sitting there. And we know injuries at this point, you're not even going to know when guys are really hurt. If they're out there, they're out there is essentially what it comes down to. Right. Whether or not Braden Point A comes back, B comes back at 100% or is, you know, functional. And at what level? That's the other question you got to ask yourself this time of year. Is Braden Point at 50% better than the guy you replace him with in the lineup? And not the next man up. I'm talking about, is Braden Point better than that guy who comes in now as your new 12th forward? Those are kind of the decisions. And can he re-injure it? So Tampa, I like them just because their business, their old guard, their two cups already. They have that experience and that savvy, and you can see it. Their swagger is back, isn't it? Tampa Bay, just especially in that Florida series, they just look like a team that knew they were not going to lose. They had that back.
Yeah, well, it starts with the goaltender, and Vasilevskiy certainly got the pedigree, and he's proven himself, and he's come up in big games, and you're now up against a goaltender who I think, frankly, you can put in the category of among the top goaltenders in the National Hockey League now. He's a guy. He didn't start off great against Pittsburgh in the playoffs. I thought he had a great regular season. I thought he really, really was good. Didn't play great at the start of the Pittsburgh series. Lost the first two games against Carolina, but he just seems to get better as the series goes along. But you're now, it is interesting, isn't it, on these two goalies? When in the pattern, at least, you've got a goalie from the Rangers who seems to get better as the series goes, but you're now going up against a goaltender who is the best, and maybe the best all time, when it comes to winning big games, must-win games, if you will. So that, to me, will be, if the Rangers are able to get a couple of games and get this to game six, now you got a goaltender again, one who gets better, seems to, at least in the first two playoff series, better as it went along, and the other one who has the ability or proven the ability to just shut it down and stop the other team when the series is on the line. So great matchup. The Rangers can, pick up a couple of games. It'll make for an interesting six or seven against each other. But I wonder, again, Rangers are a young team. Two game sevens can be wearing, but you know what? These guys are in great shape. They're the enthusiasm. Sure. Plus, you're starting at home. Yeah, I mean, you kidding me? That place will be rocking. I mean, as tired as you feel, banged up, when you go out there, you play in Madison Square Garden. It's just such a special place to play, and the sound there, just because of the building, and the ceiling and all that, it'll be electrifying. And whatever tiredness you have or bruises you've got, that'll be forgotten as soon as they show up for opening face-off of game one at home. And for the Rangers, that's a real, I think, advantage for them in the beginning, starting at home, I think, especially after two game sevens. That's a big deal for them to have finished ahead of Tampa Bay and get that home ice for the first two games. I mean, they have to come up with a split in those first two.
Mike, I was going to ask you, too, and you pretty much did there, to take us inside of that feeling in Madison Square Garden, especially in a playoff round. You've experienced it as a fan, as a professional, broadcasting games there. Man, I didn't like going in there in the regular season. It was pretty hostile as it was. I can't imagine what it's like in a conference final.
It will be just great. It is. Some of it is because there. You have to go back a little ways. Not that far, but back, was it against LA? It was the last time they were in the Stanley Cup and lost to the Kings. I think that was the case. And it's been a while. And that wasn't even a team that was a great Rangers team. But I think there's an excitement that has been built around this team. It's a young, exciting, explosive team. I just give him kudos again. Chris Drury is a winner. The Rangers, with Drury as their GM, are going to win a Stanley Cup at some point. They will. He just wins. So count on them being a powerhouse. I just don't think it's their year yet. I think this is a team that is learning, and they're going to play against a team that knows how to win, and they're going to learn from that. But I think that in terms of Madison Square Garden, there are a few places in the world that are like that for big events. And conference final will be a big event, and the fans will be pumped up. It'll be, I mean, it's an interesting crowd, because you get the group of guys who, through money, get some tickets down lower, but there's still enough of the upper balcony Ranger fans who can taunt and say things like no other fans in the country. They are, it's just great. And it was one of the things I was fascinated by. I grew up as a Mets fan, but I would go to Yankee games, and I couldn't really afford to sit down low, but I would sit up high. And I'm telling you, those fans up in the upper deck, every pitch, they're locked in and screaming and yelling about. You know, I know out here in Denver, go to a Rockies game, and bases could be full, seventh inning, tie game, 3-2, full count. People say, I got to get nachos now. It's a different sports crowd in New York. They are so into it. I mean, they're just into every pitch. And they will be not only – and it's a – you say, okay, Montreal fans are smart hockey fans, and they are. Toronto fans are smart hockey fans. You go around the league and you say, but there is an intensity in New York that's unlike any other place. It just is. And it'll – in Tampa Bay, as confident as they must feel – as good as they must feel about their game, they've got to quiet that crowd down early. They've got to have a strong first game, first period. But if the Rangers come out and they score early, get a couple of goals, look out. That place will be energizing the Rangers. So that first period, I seem to say this all the time, but I think it's really true. That first period will say a lot about Tampa Bay. If they can just come out and put that crowd to rest, and I think that'll go a long way. But if the Rangers get some momentum, look out.
I will say this about the Rangers against Tampa Bay, Mike, is I feel like if Vasilevsky goes out, let's say the Rangers do bring an absolute storm in the first period of that game. If Vasilevsky stands on his head, makes some incredible saves, and it's scoreless, or maybe they're even down by a goal, I don't think that's as demoralizing to the Rangers as it might be to Carolina. And again, all the reasons why I think New York is a better matchup, I just think the Rangers have the knowledge as they look up and down the bench. I mean, they had a 50-goal scorer this year in Chris Kreider. They know he could put the puck in the net. They have a playmaker in Zibanejad. They have all these different weapons. Adam Fox is among the playoff leaders in points right now. He's having a heck of a postseason. I mean, you know, they brought in Andrew Kopp, and he's having a good postseason. It just, they can produce. And that is the thing about this series that is going to be most interesting to me. Tampa Bay will have its leads. Tampa Bay will score in bunches. Tampa Bay will do what the Lightning do. However, I think the Rangers are not going to be out of any game. And I would have said the same thing about the Panthers, right? Going into that series, right. and look right. What difference it made. But right. I'm just hopeful. And I don't think Bobrovsky played bad. For the Panthers. I just think the Panthers weren't good enough. Similarly, I want to see if the Rangers are going to be good enough to win a couple of games here, to make it competitive, to really kind of just, you know, seize that moment for themselves. I think they're capable of it. I still think Tampa Bay, I'm not going to change my pick now. I'm so firmly in this Tampa Bay corner, but man, I feel like the Rangers, if I'm Tampa, you're right. This is not the matchup I wanted. I wanted Carolina, you know? Yeah. I was hoping they would get through. But, man, I am excited now for the East. I was a little dodgy about it, and I was more excited for the West when we talked on Sunday night. But now that I know it's the Rangers, I'm actually kind of excited for all four remaining teams here. I think this is going to – and can you argue with this playoffs? The results we've gotten, the series we've seen, some of the games that have been produced so far – man, I've been really impressed with the quality of this year's playoffs.
Yeah, the teams, there's a lot of equality to it. There's not too many teams that are far and above everybody else. I think we're not shocked. Colorado was the best team in the West all year. They were fortunate in the first round. They played a team that was terrible and didn't have their goaltender. And then they played a team in the second round that lost their goaltender. So, and they're playing a team in the third round that could lose their goaltender during pregame warmups. But the point being that it's not a shock there. Edmonton, yes, that's a surprise. In the East, it was a complete toss up when the playoffs began. We said, it could be anybody coming out of there. It's such a better conference than the West that you have to really play well to get out of there. You know, it's easy to look at Tampa Bay and talk about their four-game sweep of Florida, who was the President Trophy winner, but they were down to Toronto. I think they had to go, but they proved something. They went into Toronto and won Game 7, but that wasn't they didn't dominate the Maple Leafs. You know, it took them, I don't know what the difference, maybe you could explain to me what was the difference, how they played against Toronto, against Florida, because those two teams are a lot alike. They're heavy on the offense side. Yeah, but why did they handle Florida so much better than they handled Toronto?
I think part of it was, honestly, Jonathan Huberdeau was not as big a factor as I wanted him to be in that Florida series. I think it was a little bit easier for them to cancel Barkov when Huberdeau wasn't as active. You know, and look, for Toronto, I think they just have a few more. And this is funny to say because Florida won the President's Trophy, but I think Florida, Toronto has a few more offensive weapons than Florida did. And for whatever reason, Florida just never seemed to push the attack as much as Toronto did. That was the thing I liked about the Leafs in that series, is they could just all of a sudden counter. They had a break. They had an odd man rush, and they converted their chances. And I know Leafs fans are moaning at home about this right now and still bemoaning the whole series. Look, Tampa was good. They pushed them to seven games, but Toronto did a lot of good things in that series. They didn't quite get the goaltending to stop enough pucks, but it's awful tough to get the goaltending to stop enough pucks against Tampa Bay. And again, I didn't think Bobrovsky was bad. Execution-wise, though, Florida just did not score. What are you going to do when you're not scoring goals? Because the guy on the other end's not giving any up. So, but Florida didn't find a way to score goals where the Leafs did. That was, to me, the difference, and that allowed Tampa to really pour it on. That was just finishing. I had a coach in the minors, Mike. He always used to yell at guys. He'd say, less Swedish, more Finnish. And, you know, there was, because guys would dangle, and then they wouldn't put the puck in the net. And I'm not saying that Florida dangled too much, but they just didn't finish. And that's something maybe they're still a little young and learning and trying to figure that process out. Whereas the Leafs, I think, at least are a little bit older. And they just had that poise and that ability to finish. Neither one of them beat the Lightning, though, who are certainly the more battle-tested team.
But now for Tampa, they're going to face a better goaltender than they faced in the first two rounds.
Yes.
He's better than Campbell and Bobrovsky. And so that'll make it a much more. But that's the way it should be. You're now into the third round. You should be facing the best of the your three opponents so far. That's the way it should work. I don't think the Rangers finished second in their division. This is not a huge upset. It doesn't feel as much of an upset. They did knock off a number one. The same thing Edmonton did against Calgary, where they knocked off a number one. But that, to me, seemed more of an upset. That seemed to be a team. Well, we'll get into the Edmonton situation a little bit. But the Rangers, those aren't comparable to me. I think the Rangers were a really good team all season. They almost overtook Carolina at the end of the season for first. They were coming on strong at the end of the year. They finished strong. And it's not, because you have to look at the divisions, the way they're set up. And, you know, the Rangers, I don't think this is a huge upset that they're getting into the conference finals. That was a pretty close division. And for Tampa Bay, that one's really interesting to me, I can't take it back now, but I just thought it's impossible for a team to have enough energy, stay healthy enough to get themselves to a third consecutive cup in today's day and age. But the key to me, I think the number one thing for Tampa Bay has been Vasilevsky has stayed healthy.
Yes.
And if he stays healthy, I'm going to agree with you. They're the team to beat for the cup. If he doesn't, if something happens to him, they won't win. But he is the key to them. if he stays healthy, and that's where playing just four games in that second round is huge. Just every game you don't play is one less game you're risking an injury and you're resting. And so that worked out perfectly for him. But I'm just surprised that they've been able to, because you watch during the regular season, there was times where we thought maybe they were going to finish as a wild card, and you know, whether or not they had lost their zest, whether they just were out of gas playing, you know, two long seasons, but they're showing something right now that this is a team for the ages. This Tampa Bay Lightning. We went from the Chicago Blackhawks, from the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Chicago Blackhawks, and now this is the team of this era right now, the Tampa Bay Lightning. They're the best team.
Absolutely. And it's going to be a thrilling series to watch. All of it, by the way, broadcast on ESPN and ESPN Plus in the United States. Obviously, CBC's got the coverage for both series in Canada. But kind of looking at it here, Mike, of note, it's, first of all, a little weird to me that none of the games are on broadcast over the air TV. Everything's still on cable at this point. ESPN for the whole series, no ABC. And then the other series will be on TNT, entirely on TNT, no more TBS. And Sunday's Game 3, Rangers at Tampa Bay, will be a 3 p.m. Eastern Game 3. So you and I, when we hit the air at 9 Eastern on Sunday night, unless we are in the middle of a marathon record-setting overtime game, we'll be able to talk about that one. So, man, I wish hockey was on ABC, NBC, CBS, you know, over the air for people to watch, but I get it, you know, part of the broadcast rights, but... Man, that's one of the things, just as I was looking at that schedule, that occurred to me. And I know you and I are sensitive to this because we're broadcasters, right? Mm-hmm. But, man, it'd be nice to have the product, especially as good as it's been, accessible mm-hmm. to more people right now.
Yeah, well, they were saying after that first round, it was the most people that have watched playoffs ever. So people are finding a way to tune in if you're a hockey fan, and the games have been entertaining. The league has got to be thrilled that the Rangers are in.
Sure. So nice big market right there.
Yeah, that's why you're getting the ESPN angle. You're getting the New York game. So they're thrilled New York's there. And, you know, you're getting the two-time defending champ. So it's a nice setup, I think, in the East for the NHL. They like that.
Time for a quick break, then back with more of the Talking Puck podcast in just a moment. You know, here at Talking Puck, we generate a lot of media on different platforms. Open Media's 4K download suite makes my life a lot easier, and it can help you too. Whether you need to download audio clips, convert streams to audio, which we do a lot of here, creating slideshows, or even need help with your social media accounts like Instagram and TikTok, there's something for everyone, from casual user to pro. Use our special link, bit.ly/4kpuck. That's bit.ly/4kpuck to receive a special discount of 25% off your purchase. That's bit.ly/4kpuck. Talking Puck is now on Signal to Noise Radio every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. Signal to Noise is one of the fastest growing internet radio stations, and now they have merch. Help spread the word about Signal to Noise Radio with t-shirts, stickers, keychains, and more. Shipping is direct and free. $25 gets you a t-shirt, while keychains and swag packs start at just $7. Order today at stnradio.com/merch. And thanks for your support. Now back to the show.
Canada's got to be thrilled that one of the four teams left is a Canadian team. So you still get Canada interested in what the Oilers are going to do. And they have become, it's an interesting juxtaposition for the Oilers, isn't it? Because this was a team for so long, and again, aging myself here, but that was a dominant team in the 80s, you know, when they won five cups during the 80s, and just they were the best team at that point by far with Gretzky and company. And but now they have changed roles, haven't they? They are the underdog team, aren't they? They're the kind of, if you're a Canadian hockey fan, you're rooting for them because they're such an underdog, and you're even though they've got the best player in the game, you're still like, how in the world are they doing it? And you brought up a great, interesting story about how some of the talk in the national networks on radio about how Mike Smith is suddenly, people are rooting for him as this, you know, over 40-year-old, you know, creaky-kneed, you know, made out of glass goaltender. Can he hang in there for a team that has, you know, had two upsets in a sense? And I don't know. It's become an interesting story for the Edmonton Oilers because they were written off. They were done. They weren't going to make the playoffs, blow it up. They fired their coach. And here they are with a chance. They're four games away from going to the Stanley Cup. It's amazing. It's a great story.
Yeah, it is something else. And as we do shift to take a look at the West, Mike, I mean, we could definitely start with the story of this Oilers team. I was just thinking, as you were talking, the cycle of dynasties. Mm-hmm. Because it seems like we have had teams that have won at least two cups for a long time. Like in the 70s, you had the early 70s, the Bruins won two out of three, and then you had Philly winning two in a row, Montreal four in a row, Islanders four in a row, Oilers four out of five, Penguins mm-hmm. grabbed a couple in a row, and then it kind of took a little bit of a break in there, and it was, you know, bouncing around like New Jersey, Detroit, Colorado, but there were several good teams vying for the top. But then Chicago and L.A., the most recent examples of teams that were able to put it together, not in consecutive years, but every other year. And by the way, you were right. It was the Rangers and the Kings in 2014. Yeah. So that was the last time we've seen what Tampa Bay is attempting to really do here and put this string together, which they've got back-to-back. Can they go for a third? But when you talk about the underdogs in those runs, I think a lot of those teams are the memorable ones of where did they come from? How did they get to where they are? Like we still talk about the Kings coming in as the 8 seed, right? And going all the way. They just got hot at the right time, took off. Things came together for them. And I'm looking at Edmonton. They get by the Kings, and that was an uninspiring series. There wasn't a whole heck of a lot to write home about there, but they look so much better against Calgary. And now you start to wonder, are things coming together? They could have had, look, they could have melted down after game one against the Flames.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they could have just done a complete meltdown. We lost 9-6. We have no idea which end is up. Our game is supposed to be scoring goals, and they scored 9 on us. So I could see. But the thing is, that game was oddly competitive. Because Calgary was never safe. You know, you get the feeling if there was another period of hockey, that game might have ended 11-10. And I don't know who would have won. So, you know, that's the thing about the Oilers. They're there from an offensive standpoint. Their defense has not been great, but it's been better. And it's getting better in the playoffs. And they don't have the experience that Colorado has necessarily. Just through looking at, you know, Colorado's at least made the playoffs and made it into the second round a couple times. Now, they haven't made the conference final yet. Neither one of these two teams have. So this is still new. But for the Oilers, the confidence is really what's going to carry this team. That's what they have to bring in against Colorado because this is just a feeling. I have no stats to back this up. This is an eyeball test thing watching these teams play. Colorado feels much more comfortable in its skin. They understand who they are, how they need to play to win, and what brings them a victory. And maybe part of that for me with the Oilers is because the coaching change really did just change things in the middle of the season. And in a way, I mean, they didn't have a training camp. They didn't have an offseason to prepare with this new coach. They're just learning on the fly. So I'm wondering if they are finally starting to lock in to what Jay Woodcroft is bringing to the table for this Oilers team from a coaching and X's and O's standpoint. And it is kicking in now. Maybe they do have that confidence. But at this point, that's what it's all about for me and the Oilers. They have to be confident in who they are, how they execute their game plan, and how they go out and play. Because I think Colorado has that. They don't have a doubt. When the Avalanche look in the mirror, they know who they are. The Oilers, I think, are just starting to find that identity. The question is, will it crack against Colorado once they're under that kind of pressure from the Avs?
It all comes down to Mike Smith. It just does. I mean, I hate to say it.
I was trying to avoid mentioning him in that whole spiel. No,
yeah, I know you did, but that this is puts you right back on the Callahan plate.
There you go.
You have to be honest. That's what it does. You don't know what you're getting from him. He gives up goals, shots over the red line, but then, you know, he can do some other things for you. And the bottom line is he is who you have. You're going to live and die with him. You just hope he can stay healthy. That's it. If he doesn't stay healthy, they're done. They're finished. They're not going to win that series.
Yeah, we saw what Koskinen did not do when he came in relief.
He's not going to play against them. Against Colorado, he doesn't have a chance. So
yeah.
And then the whole team, it just shifts. When you don't have your guy, I've seen enough of it through the years. When your number one guy is hurt and out. I mean, we already saw it against Nashville. They didn't have their number one guy. They were done from game one. And then once St. Louis lost their guy, their number one guy, they were done. So, you know, Colorado's hoping that they can get a three-peat and see another goaltender go down and use that to their advantage. If that's the case, they'll move on to the Stanley Cup Finals. But, you know, we talked a little bit about this on Sunday, and I just want to say it again that you have guys who are leaders, and you have a Connor McDavid who's the best player in the game. He has something to prove. He's in the prime of his career, and he is capable of carrying a team offensively. He can't stop pucks. He's not your key guy defense, but he is going to give you a chance against a high scoring team to match them. So if you're going to get, you should get offensive thrust. That was a lot of the problem with Nashville. They couldn't get any offense going. Certainly a case for St. Louis. They couldn't get any offense going, but Edmonton should. They have the guns to do it. And if McDavid can push the play and create some scoring chances, and they can match for goals, it'll come down to Smith and the defensive play for Edmonton. And I don't know. And whether you think it's intangible or not, I do believe in teams of destiny, and there are Cinderella stories every year. And out of all the four teams left, they're the Cinderella story. And do they've got enough? I don't know if they've got enough to make it into the Stanley Cup Finals. They again have got to start on the road. They have to split. They have to split going into Denver. They cannot go back home down 2-0. I think they'll be done if that's the case. They have to split. Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, Mike. And, you know, the thing that's going to be great about this series, they're both puck control teams. Mm-hmm. They both want to possess the puck, skate with the puck, own the ice. There's only one puck. If we split it in half, you know, maybe it'd be a different series. But, wow, this is going to be a battle for control. And here's something I've not said once in the playoffs, but I think the most important part of this series, honestly, is going to be the neutral zone. Because of the way both of these teams can counterattack, because of their speed on the counter, because of how they can generate off of turnovers, neutral ice for both teams is going to be so important. Who's going to be able to stop the forecheck of the other team? Who's going to be able to stop the breakouts from the other team, force those turnovers, and make those key plays? And I know that's kind of a hockey nerd way to look at it, and I'm not apologizing for it, but that, to me, once the puck is over the blue line, I expect both teams to go to work and do what they do. It's getting the puck over the blue line in this series that's going to determine which way the pendulum swings.
Yeah, no, you're right. Once you get it into the zone, offensive zone, both teams are certainly capable of holding on to it for a long time, which then leads to the next part, is which team defensively is going to be able to prevent the other team from holding that puck for a long time. Because if you know, either team gets it, moves it around, they're going to score goals. They just will.
Yeah.
That's just the way hockey works. If you're in the zone long enough and moving the puck around, the goaltender has to be moving. Somebody gets open. Backdoor plays happen. Rebounds, those things. That's how you score goals, and both teams are capable of doing that. I just don't know if Edmonton's defense is good enough to stop that wave once it gets into their zone. I'll just take it a step further than what you said. I just think it's more of not necessarily the neutral zone, but once the puck is in the zone, which defensive team is going to be able to get it out of their zone? And not be chasing around, because once you start chasing around against either team, you're in trouble. Both teams have got defensemen who can skate it out of the zone in a hurry. I just think Edmonton is not as good strictly from a defenseman posture. I think they both have got really good players who get out of their zone in a hurry. And when you've got, and they've got guys who can make that first pass. That's the other thing that I think is one of the most overlooked things in hockey and not talked enough about. Great teams, Tom, have great one-time passes out of the zone. And if that's what you've got to do, let's say you're Edmonton and Colorado's in your zone, you're chasing them. If you can get to the puck, it's not necessarily about chipping it out. It's about making that pass to get your forwards going the other way. And that's when you get your opportunities, because one team or the other is going to be pressing. Because once they get in the zone, it's their offensive eyes just light up. And now they're thinking that. But if you can get that breakout pass, all of a sudden it's odd man going the other way. That's where you're going to score goals. That's going to be the key to me, is watching which team makes the better breakout passes.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I'm just looking over the Oilers' defense core here. The primary six, because there have been a couple of guys who parachuted in for a game, but Evan Bouchard, Darnell Nurse, Brett Kulak, Cody Ceci, Tyson Berry, Duncan Keith. That's your top six for Edmonton.
Right.
Out of those guys, I see the ability to move the puck. Obviously, you expect offense out of Barry, who actually only has four points. But
which is surprising.
It is.
I watched him for years. He way underrated in how he wasn't great defensively, but way underrated in terms of his ability to get involved offensively. He was a great offensive defenseman.
Yeah,
he really was.
But Duncan Keith, as we mentioned, is the gray beard there and maybe a bit of an X factor. But then you go over to Colorado and look at their D. Cale Makar is the standout guy, right? I mean, he's all ends. He does everything. Samuel Girard, who's been injured, has played seven games. But Devon Toews, who I think was just such a tremendous pickup for this Avalanche team. The rest of their top six, Bowen Byram is there. Josh Manson, who Manson has been another underrated acquisition because he's played big physical minutes for them. Takes a little bit of that pressure off Eric Johnson. And look, does Manson take an occasional penalty? Yes. Johnson actually only has 2 minutes in Pims through here. So, that's nice to see for him. But really, Colorado, I give the edge to Colorado's defense just on paper. But I wonder, Mike, if within that offensive pressure in the zone that we're talking about, I mean, who's less likely to break down? That's the question, and that's kind of why I still am going to lean Colorado in this series, despite the fact that I feel like Edmonton can really just pile pucks in the net for certain stretches over the course of a seven-game series. If it goes to plan for both teams, if they were both able to play the best that they can, I think that Colorado is the team. But, man, we know that mistakes happen. Guys step up and some guys disappear. Maybe, there is a little bit of a crack of daylight there for the Oilers.
Yeah, I think more so than anything, I'm going to say it again, it's which goaltender stays healthy. Kemper's made out of glass and so is Smith. and one of them is going to break. And you just don't know when it's coming, but expect somebody's going to get hurt. And
as you pointed out before, if it is Colorado, you have way more confidence in Pavel Francouz coming in. Way more.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, you've got to, it's not ideal, but he's better than Edmonton's number two. So, that has been the undoing the last 2 years for Colorado, is their top goaltender got hurt the last 2 years in the playoffs.
Oh, and that's right.
That's what happened the last 2 years. They went to their number three last year against Dallas, and you don't win playoff series with number threes. You just don't. And so that's why I think they've been fortunate. Their goalies haven't been tested really, or he hasn't been tested, but he's going to be busier in this series, you would think. And it's a matter of time. One of those two goaltenders will get hurt, and whichever one stays healthy, that team will win the series.
So, Mike, we've talked about the East and the West here. Before we wrap this up, let's do a drive-by on the four teams that were just bounced: Florida, Carolina, Calgary, St. Louis. Out of those four teams, who has the most work to do? Who's okay, and who maybe really, just needs to stand pat learning experience will grow, and which teams really need to improve to get further into the playoffs and maybe challenge for a cup?
This is easy. In the West, St. Louis is done. That team is finished. The window is closed on them. Calgary is still a team, I think, that they're an interesting group. I really thought they were going to get to the conference finals, but they have some tweaking to do. But they're not horrible against the cap in a sense, and they've got some good enough young players that are still learning. I don't know what happened to Markstrom in that second round. He did not play great. So you would hope that you had found your goaltender. But I think Calgary can still continue to go forward. They're a good team. They finished first in their division. Out East, Carolina didn't have their goalie. And I think that's a team that can still be good. But to me, Florida is the team that you just go, they still have all the pieces to make a Stanley Cup run, and they're going in the right direction for sure. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
So I'm going to disagree with you on St. Louis to start with. I think St. Louis still has a window. Are they an older team? Yes, but they're not Boston old. Where I'm looking at Boston, and especially, Boston may be facing some retirements here, unless Ryan O'Reilly just, for whatever reason, decides he's done. They still have a good core in St. Louis, but they have work to do because that's a tough division. I mean, look at that. Like Minnesota, they had struggled, but they got past them in six. Colorado beat St. Louis in six. It did not help that St. Louis lost Binnington at the wrong time. But St. Louis, for everything that they are, and I do believe they're a team that's physical and tough and is built to win in the playoffs, they're still not as good as Colorado. Mm-mm. They're just not. And Colorado's the class of that division, let alone the conference. So they've got work to do. Calgary has an interesting offseason because of their contracts that are coming up and some decisions to be made. But that said, if you believe in Markstrom, which you better for that contract he's got, you've got to do a little bit more defensively around him, I think. They do have to get better defensively. They do have to improve. Florida, I like. And if I were Florida, I actually would see if I could move on from Bobrovsky this summer to try to turn things over to Knight as a goaltender moving forward. Maybe you have another season with Bobrovsky, but if there's somebody who might be interested in him and that giant contract, that could free you up to do a lot of things. And Carolina is a question mark for me. They lost Freddie Anderson. They were so good during the regular season, but Calgary was so good during the regular season, didn't lose their goaltender, and still didn't beat Edmonton. So, I don't know. Are the Hurricanes... I like Brendan Moore as a coach. I like the way that team is built. I would like them to have more scoring. I don't know if they have room to add it. But they could use one or two just dedicated guys. Now, you're probably giving a little something up defensively to get those guys. But at the end of the day, when they were down 2-0 in Game 7 against the Rangers, there were a couple of names I was looking for to step up for them. Nobody really did. You know, there was not a moment in that game where I looked at the Carolina bench and someone jumped out and I said, all right, now it's going to happen for Carolina. Now they have a real chance to buzz on this shift. Whereas the Rangers have that. Tampa has that. Colorado has that. They put guys over the board, and certainly Edmonton has that. When there's certain players on the ice, you expect, here we go, buckle up. Yep. Carolina doesn't have that. They need to add that. So that's just my my quick analysis on it.
Those are tough guys to get. They're tough guys to find. And you look at the teams that you mentioned, virtually all of them did it through drafting by being bad. And they were able to draft well. You know, that's where you get your studs, you know, your scores, by having some bad seasons. And you get a high draft choice, and they come through. Carolina's problem is they finished first. They're not going to get great draft choices. So how do they find a guy? You have to make a big trade, or you have to go out for free agency and sign somebody. Boy, what's going to happen in? Do you think Laine, is he a guy that you go, okay, you know, he can score? Do we make a deal? Do we go get him? Here's one for you. Do you throw all your chips in at Chicago and say, what would it take for Patrick Kane to come to Carolina? I mean, you have to start. You're not going to be able to draft a guy who's going to be a 50 goal scorer. You're going to have to make a deal, right?
Yes. And affording Kane might be tough. I kind of like your idea of Laine for Carolina. Here's the X factor team for me, and it's going to depend on who their coach is, what their attitude is going forward, but they're in cap hell. It's not even jail. They're in cap hell is Vegas.
Yeah, I know.
Vegas has to shed some salary. It's just who they're going to pick.
Yeah. So maybe there's somebody available through, from Vegas, that you can make a deal with, because they've got to do something there, obviously. But I that's the way the Carolina is going to have to do it. They're going to have to do it through free agency or a big time trade. And, they've got some guys that would be attractive that, have decent contracts. So if you're willing to make a deal, I think Carolina, if they want to solve that scoring problem, they're going to have to make it through a trade or free agency.
Yeah. And they're also, every team here, every season faces question marks in the offseason for big names. But, I'm also not a believer, Mike, that I think 95% of free agents signed in the summer are pieces. But if you need them to be the guy, it's very rare the guy hits the open market. It's just rare.
No, it is. And the guy with enough left. I mean, you look at Malkin. I mean, you don't want to go out and spend a fortune on Malkin. He's got the name. He's certainly got, the resume, but he's not the answer that you're looking for. You need a guy in his, mid to upper 20s, who you can have for 7 years, who's going to be able to help you score, because you've got a good foundation there. And if you can get Anderson back and be healthy and be a good goaltender again next season, you need some more scoring. But I don't think you don't need a Phil Kessel. I mean, you need a Laine who can come in and score goals and can do it for 7 years.
Yeah. There's going to be some interesting decisions for a lot of these teams. And even for like a Johnny Gaudreau in Calgary, a Claude Giroux in Florida, where do those guys go? Of course, we're wondering what's all going to happen with Patrice Bergeron, but there's questions out there. So we'll see. We'll see when we get there. But we're not there yet, Mike. We got four teams left standing in the Stanley Cup playoffs: Colorado, Edmonton, Tampa, New York. And I think it's going to be a tremendous run here through the conference final. Very excited to see who's going to come out of the East and the West. So it's a great time to be a hockey fan.
It is, and it'll be electric in New York. That'll be fun to watch those first two games at Madison Square Garden, and then from a Canadian standpoint, if you're a fan there, you're hoping that the Oilers can at least split their first two games, and if they got to come back, there'll be some excitement, but it'll be a sense of, well, it's just not going to happen if they drop both games to begin the series. So But if they split, at least they come back to Edmonton. Wow, that'll be a fun that'll be a fun place to watch a game too. So I'm looking forward, especially to that game one in New York, because you're seeing the best team in Tampa against an exciting club that's on fire right now and full of confidence and playing in front of a fun crowd. So that's the better series, certainly out east. I think that one has a chance to go either way. Edmonton, the only way they win is if they truly are a team of destiny and their goaltender stays healthy.
So game one, Avalanche Oilers, is tonight, Tuesday night, and that starts at 8 p.m. Eastern time on TNT. And then game one, Tampa Rangers, is tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. And Mike and I will be live Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern to break down where we are so far in each series and take a look at how the Rangers and Lightning and Avalanche and Oilers are doing. Don't forget, our podcasts are out a couple times a week. And if you like what you hear, please subscribe. We appreciate you being here. So I think that's a great place for us to wrap things up. We will talk to you guys next time on the Talking Puck podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. I'm at Callahan on Air. Mike is at BusterTheDog33. And I hope you enjoy the conference finals. I know we will. So thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon.